Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone, and welcome back to Real LaRue's podcast. I know I've left it late. I know it's match day, but I wasn't going to leave you hanging. Alright? You can listen to this on the way to the game or on the way from whatever, the office to the sofa, wherever you watch it. No shame here, no judgment. I'm going to dive straight in. You might have heard him before on the podcast. He's a writer, he's a producer, and most of all, he's a fucking horrible gooner. It's Ben Welch. How you doing, mate? It's good to good to have you back, I guess.
I'll only decide whether it's good to be back full time tonight. And I'm not good, no. I woke up this morning thinking about it, drove my little boy to school thinking about it. He asked me if he could stay up and watch it, and I was kind of umming and ahhing. He's only five. So he'll have his first experience of heartbreak and probably the first time hear me say the C word out loud. So, Well, it will be Conte in a sentence with another C word. I feel genuinely like I don't want to watch it. I said to my mates, I might not watch the first 20 minutes because that's it's going to be too stressful. I know that Tottenham will start fast. The crowd will be well up for it. Kane and Son are going to have a little look over at Cedric at right back and think, yes, we'll have some of that. And I'm nervous. I don't feel good about it.
If someone had told you, 15, 20 years or so ago, that you'd be nervous ahead of a North London derby, you wouldn't have believed them, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, like the teams that I really remember when I used to play for a football team, Ongar Town, and it was very much an Arsenal Spurs split in that team. And we just didn't care about Spurs because they had like Steve Sedgley, Vinny Samways. I know this is more than 15 years ago, and it's like, yeah, Spurs. I mean, the 1991 FA Cup semi-final loss was awful. It was the first time I cried about football. And so I just sort of they never bothered me. And then I actually quite liked it in a way when they started to get good because I had a reason to look forward to that game and enjoy it. Now, in an era where Spurs have arguably been better than Arsenal, I absolutely hate that game more than any game. Dread it, feel sick, can't bear to lose. It's awful. But, you know, they're a good team. And ultimately, I was saying to someone today, this is either the best night, you know, of your year, or it's the worst night. So it's a very much a Russian roulette. It can pay off, but at the same time, it can basically then make you think, oh, I hate football. Fuck it. I'm out. I'm supporting Southend United from now on. So, it's good. I like having Spurs up there, but I just kind of wish they were, you know, it's like, well done, you've come along, you know, you're good, but we're better.
Our Martignol era, when we were still, we were like manageably good for you. It's like, North London Derby's a bit more of an occasion now, but we'll still finish above them. And they're not
like
going to win anything. Maybe a League Cup.
I like that. I do not like this era of Spurs, not at all.
Well, we still don't fucking win anything, so you don't have to worry too much. See what I mean? If we were doing what Liverpool are doing, I'd sort of get it more, but, you know.
I know, but we're both in that, you know, where you feel like football is now just become, well, before I used to think it was, you know, we're target this, we'll try and win this. Now football is just, is hope for me. And just winning those big games across the season and knowing that really, I know we've won some FA Cups in like recent times, but, you know, now it's just like the Liverpool Man City era and we'll never be able to compete with them or probably Chelsea in terms of money and stuff. So now it's just about beating Spurs and finishing as high as we can.
Well, what, as we're on Liverpool, before we sort of dive nuts deep, as they say, into the North London derby, it would be interesting to get your take on. Did you watch Liverpool Spurs the other day?
I did.
So Klopp afterwards, you know, there was a lot of his kind of, and I get it, right? Klopp's a salty, he's a salty loser, and that's probably what propels him to be such a great winner. I understand all that sort of thing. But a lot of the kind of the discourse from like Liverpool fans, and I guess that was provoked by Klopp, was that Tottenham played this massively overly defensive game that it kind of was made out that we played like Stoke, which I would say from my perspective, I mean, I'm on record, I'm not the biggest Conte fan, I'm not the biggest fan of his football, that sort of stuff, but I kind of felt that Spurs played well, and a lot of our sort of defensive action was just a reaction to Liverpool being, what, the probably the best team in Europe at the moment, or second best if you're going to count Manchester City. I mean, how did you were you watching us thinking we were Stoke with Son and Kane up front, or?
Not at all. I absolutely like. I hate that nonsense, that retort from Klopp. I used to hate it when Wenger used to churn it out when we used to play teams that, you know, got everyone man behind the ball. I was like, well, find a way. That's what the best teams do. Find a way. What is only, you know, complete naivety and stupidity that you'd play into the hands of one of the best teams in the world. I think Spurs played a brilliant game. I mean, I hated watching it. I was sick when they scored and when celebrated Diaz's goal like it was an Arsenal goal, and then really wanted them to go on and win it. But I think Spurs did a great job. They played really well, and I don't have issues with teams doing that. You know, that is an aspect of tactical acumen that any good teams have, and you have to adapt and play to your strengths, and Spurs did that. So, yeah, I thought it was nonsense. I think Klopp, I'm not sure, I think yesterday might have come out and sort of since reviewed those quotes, but, yeah, never liked it when Wenger did it and don't like to hear it now.
I mean, he is amazing, isn't he, though, Klopp? He's, a couple of years ago when we were sort of more neck and neck with Liverpool, and obviously the Champions League final that I like to bring up and punch myself in the face with constantly, and more like when we're in the league, when we were kind of in that little band of teams that was pushing for the sort of, for the very top, there was a bit of a 5-minute rivalry between Liverpool and Spurs. And I think now they're not particularly asked about, as they hate Harry Kane, and there is something about Spurs that they're not really that fond of. I think my sort of take on it is that Liverpool are one of those teams that they want ownership of the whole kind of we're the dreamers type shit. And I just think they don't like the fact that Spurs are sort of similar in that way and whatever. But I mean, you know, there's something about Klopp and that, what he's the sort of, the magic that he's managed to create around them that's made me not hate them. Like, and I can't stand the fan base. I cannot stand the kind of the entitlement of that. But Liverpool as a team, I cannot help but marvel at them, you know, because they're unbelievable. They are, to have the sort of the intensity as consistently as they have across what, probably 4 or 5 years now. It's unbelievable. 3 Champions League finals in 5 years. It's unheard of. I suppose it probably makes you a bit gutted, because I think you were quite heavily linked to Klopp, weren't you, a few years back before they got him?
Yeah, I mean, I've read the Klopp book. I think it's called, I can't remember what it, there's a Klopp book by Raphael Hoggenstein, and I've read that and I liked it. I love Klopp. I think that when you watch Liverpool, me as an individual, it certainly appeals to my sort of personality, and I think that football fans love watching them. Not put their attacking capabilities aside, it's more that the players like the intensity and the effort that they put in, because when you watch that, you're kind of envious that you want your players and your team to fight for the club and the badge and the team like that, and harass the team, and they play like an actual fan would last about 5 minutes before puking up, but the intensity of which they play, you're like, that it's like they're playing like they're a fan. because they want to win so bad, it means so much to them. And Klopp is everything, encapsulates everything again. Like he reacts, he's animated like a fan, even though sort of salty outbursts is like emotional like a fan. He hugs, he fist pumps, he's in it, he lives it, he breathes it, he experiences it like a fan. And that, and I think, is what resonates the most. And it's when you see players who even not kind of, they could be wearing any shirt and they don't play with that level of intensity, and they're not bringing it to every game that is, you know, do or die. And when your manager just looks nonplussed on the sidelines, or, you know, I think that's what we all want, and that's why it appeals to us. And like, you know, I can understand why Conte might irritate you, but on the sidelines he lives and breathes it. Like when you score, like that's what you want to see. You want to see your manager go mad. You want to see him frustrated, irritated, gesticulating, animated. And I think Conte and Arteta both bring that, and that adds another dynamic and interest, I think, to the game.
I'd be interested to know your thoughts on Conte, actually. I mean, were you... Obviously, I mean, I think everyone was happy other than Spurs fans when Nuno Espirito Santo was in charge. But when we sort of did act decisively and get rid of him, because it was a disaster, and I can't really imagine anybody was expecting much different from that. And we brought in Conte. I mean, I can imagine the initial sort of fear might have been there, but as it's kind of gone on, you kind of seen his sort of demeanour at Spurs, everything like that. Does it still bother you? Do you think he could be onto a good thing at Spurs, or Spurs could be onto a good thing with him, or do you see it as a sort of a mismatch of styles, identities? I'm genuinely just interested to know how you feel about it from the outside. If it bothers you that Tottenham have Antonio Conte in charge, basically, as an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I do. I think he's good. I don't think that Tottenham are going to do anything other than compete with us, because, and that's not, you know, me reacting emotionally because I'm an Arsenal fan and I just want to downplay what they're capable of achieving. But I don't think anyone outside Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea are really ever going to be, maybe Manchester United, depending on, you know, how their next sort of phase of their post-Ferguson era develops, because they've got the money. But it doesn't matter, really. You know, there are anomalies, obviously, along the way, Leicester City being one, winning trophies and stuff. But really, if you can't buy the players, it doesn't matter how good a manager you are. And Spurs are very much in that. I think recruitment has to be so spot on. And there are lots of players that you could look at that Spurs have bought where it's a lot of money, but in this market, even like 30 million is like a gamble now. It's not like a guaranteed good player. And you can see lots of players in the Tottenham team where you're like, they cost a lot of money, they've had a reasonably good career so far, played for big clubs, but they're just kind of average. And you can see that in Arsenal as well. I mean, look at Pepe, spent loads of money on him, hasn't really delivered. And that is the bracket with which Arsenal and Spurs are in. They can spend maybe more than other clubs, but you can't guarantee, you're not spending enough to almost guarantee that the player is going to be a success. And I think that Man City and Liverpool can do that. I think Conte, I don't know if he'd stay at Spurs, because I don't know if for him competing for a top four and maybe an FA Cup or whatever is good enough. I think he wants to be, you know, managing one of the top teams in Europe. But I think that he is obviously very typically Italian in terms of he's a hard taskmaster. He's, football is a profession to him. It's not really something to be enjoyed. And I think he's good tactically. I think that he is a bit polarizing. He's a bit kind of Marmite-y, and maybe that's how the players respond to him. But I think players of high standards like Harry Kane and some of the best players you've got, I'd be interested to know how they feel about his, you know, when he comes into a sort of public forum and criticizes him and stuff. But that's the standards that he expects. And I'm not sure. Yeah, like his man management's a bit like Mourinho. It kind of, has, it's a little bit old school in terms of berating players, but I think that he motivates the players that demand the highest from themselves. And like I said, I think he's good tactically. I think he's a good manager. I just can't see someone like him staying at Spurs, and I might be wrong. And the same thing, and I say that, I wouldn't see him staying at Arsenal either if he was there, because he definitely believes he should be managing, you know, City, Liverpool, or whoever, and competing for every title.
It's funny, isn't it? It's a tough one, because I think, if I'm correct in saying, I think around the time they appointed Ancelotti, there was some talk that they passed up on Conte. You know, United passed up on him this summer, and we've heard him all throughout the season. I think one of my big issues with him is just is that demeanour. I think I understand the theatrical side of it. I do take on board that this is something he's done at every single club he's ever been at. But what I always put back to that is that he's pretty much walked out of every other club he's been at. So it's not really reassuring if he's in every press conference saying, maybe I'll leave. Maybe, you know, if this club isn't going to, you know, challenge for top honours, then maybe I'll leave. Because this is kind of how I don't really see how the club are expected to give a man £100 million this summer, £100 million to spend on players to build a team if they are worried he's going to walk out halfway through the year. So I don't. It's a bit kind of.
But what does even £100 million do,
well,
anyway?
This is it. And I mean, and on that point, actually, it is quite interesting when you really think about it, that because I've seen a lot of talk when, say, the Newcastle takeover happened, and they were putting out these kind of things through whatever their affiliated journalists that were saying, well, no, there's not going to be Mbappes, there's not going to be Haalands, you know, this is going to be careful, considered buying with a long-term kind of roadmap and all that. No, all that it means is, like you were saying, is Tottenham and Arsenal, right? We can make a gamble on. Look at Ndombele. We spent, what, 50, 60 mil on him? You spent 70 mil on Pepe. And we have to rely on that gamble paying off. That player has to work for us. And in both instances, they haven't. You know, whereas City, as we've seen, what they can do is, and this is one of those things, they're oft lauded for, you know, well, they don't spend like, you know, the Galacticos of Real Madrid used to do, and they don't spend like PSG do. No, but they still every single summer buy three or four players who are, what, 50, 60 million pounds, stick them on 200k a week. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, they've
built. Remember, you know, how long has that era been at Man City? They weren't good straight away. They've built that squad over time. It wasn't like a overnight click your fingers, we've got this. They now, you know, they're now in a position where they can afford to make those misses. But you know, they bought players at the beginning, and they hired wrong. They didn't always have like the right manager. In the kind of different eras of Man City getting to the point where they are, and they spent money and failed, but
of course. But I mean, the point is more that they can.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. But what I'm saying is they've over time they've built this squad where even they can fail because they've got. It's ridiculous. Like you look at their depth. You know, two, three players in some positions, just world class. Like or. How can you compete? I look at that squad and I think, what's, you know, there's literally no chance, not in any, there is no way that Arsenal are ever, ever going to be able to compete with them.
Because we saw it last night in the game when Laporte went down injured or, you know, looked like he was hurt at least. And the commentators are making that, well, Man City are going to be in trouble now, or, you know, if he's out, they're in trouble. Got £50 million Nathan Ake warming up on the sidelines. Nice. You know what I mean? Like, it just, come on. You know what's? Are we supposed to have sympathy for this? You know, I don't quite get it. But it. I think this is the important thing, right? Because Spurs we're sort of beating around the head consistently with what have you won? And I get it. A lot of it is footy banter. You know, it's the it's what we live and breathe. You know, it's what it's there for. And there is something to be said for the fact that under Pochettino we didn't win anything at all. I do get that. I'm not like completely oblivious to that. I'm not going to sort of, you know, pretend that it doesn't matter at all, because it obviously does. But at the same time, like we're saying here, you know, I mean, I think if you even look at, I was saying the other week, you look at how amazing this Liverpool team is, right? You look at this Jurgen Klopp era. There's every chance they're going to win the Premier League once in this whole era. And you, it just makes you think, fucking hell, you know? Like,
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I was thinking it last night. I played football last night, and when I got back, the Man City game was still going on, but I think they were like 4-1 up by the time I got home. And I was like, imagine being Liverpool. You know that, you know, they got beat by 1 point that year when it was, it they got 99 and Man City
99 points. Yeah.
And then it's going to be the same here. And it's like, imagine being that good and not winning, because Man City are just this kind of relentless, not functional, that's the wrong word, but you know, like they just get the job done, and their consistency is ridiculous. And it's because they come, you know, they can shuffle their team, they can bring in world-class players. You know, like when Man City are at home to basically anyone other than, you know, some teams in the top five, top six, top four, whatever, it's just like, yeah, there's no point in watching that game. Like, what is the point in watching it? They're just going to win. They're incredible, but kind of boring at the same time.
Well, this is it. And I think that the problem is, right, that we all face is, say the 1 year City do, you know, they're just not quite in sync with one another and whatever, as happens to any team. It doesn't matter how much sort of depth they have or money they have. There's just going to be a year when things are being realigned or whatever. Generally speaking, that's when Chelsea step up, because they're another team that's been doped in a particularly sort of similar way. So I think what we derive joy from in football, we're all having to go through a big sort of like process of realigning that, because I feel that even in their sort of heydays of you and Manchester United being the two best teams in the country, I mean, I don't know, United looked pretty impenetrable. And again, I'm not just doing the banter thing, like, you know, Ferguson's legacy was there for all to see, and Wenger was brilliant, and Arsenal were obviously an exceptional side, but I don't know, United did look different. But either way, there wasn't this sort of sense of hopelessness that there kind of is now in football, that, you know, that certain...
I think because if you look at United, they'd had eras where they were dominant before, you know, and fallen away. So there's the context of that when you look at how dominant they were. And also, although obviously they were the richest team, they weren't, you felt like other teams, they weren't like Man City rich, just like not in that era. Like if you contextualize it, like they weren't like, you know, Man City, even as a business, I imagine is like a drop in the ocean to their owners. Like it's whatever, it's nothing what they're spending. And also, the reason Wenger was able to disrupt that United era was because he basically, I mean, lots of things that he changed the way players trained in this country. And also, more than anything, he had a scouting network that was able to get players like, you know, game changers like Vieira, Henry. And that was what brought on a new era within the Premier League. But also he had an advantage, which he had something that no one else had at the time. But now every team in the Premier League era is in the kind of stratosphere where every team's got a scouting network. Every team really in the Premier League can, you know, teams that get relegated spend 30 million on players, which is crazy. So I think that the hopelessness is, it comes from the fact that we've never, although Man City have been sort of, you know, they've been as far down as League One, we've never seen them climb to these heights with which they're at now and then fall, which we've kind of seen with United, where they had really successful eras and then have fallen. And also, they're just so rich. Even in an era of rich teams, they're richer than everyone else, really. And they can just buy and they can just improve. It's like, oh, we spend 100 million on Grealish. Hasn't had the best season. So what? Like, we've got a ridiculous squad. So I think that is the hopelessness of it. I think what would need to happen maybe is that a manager comes in you know, whoever replaces Pep and gets it wrong. I think that would maybe give some of us some hope.
Interestingly on this though, like where do you think it's, where has it gone wrong for Arsenal? Because I mean, right, you don't have the same European pedigree as them, but really domestically, your history is comparable to a team like Liverpool. You have that same heritage, you know, you are, you know, it's disgusting to say, but you are one of the biggest teams in like in England, in historically speaking anyway. But it seems strange that you seem so resigned as an Arsenal fan to kind of playing second fiddle to even Liverpool. Because I think the difference with Liverpool is, and I'm interested in this, because I feel that sooner or later, they're great, don't get me wrong, they're fantastic, brilliant team. But sooner or later, the wheels are going to come off of it. They just are. Like it has to. And I know this is sort of one of those things people say, well, people have been saying this for years, but there comes a point when it is unsustainable. It's either going to be, you know, Salah goes or Mane goes, or they just stop responding or listening to Klopp. You know, you can see they haven't spent... I mean, I know they just bought Diaz, but he was relatively cheap. They can't spend with the same sort of ferocity as someone like City or even Chelsea. I mean, remains to be seen what Ted Bowley will do with the club, but you'd imagine it'd probably be a similar thing as Abramovich. And so I'm sort of intrigued to know why you think that the... Because I still think that, you know, you're still a club that you basically manage to sign pretty much whoever you want unless City are in for them. And that's kind of what the reality that everybody has to face, right? But what is it that gives, like, leaves you feeling so hopeless about Arsenal's kind of ability to do what Liverpool are doing now, for example, if you got the right manager in? Not saying Arteta isn't, but you know what I mean.
No, there's always that. You know, without going too heavy on into too much detail on Klopp, I think that he is the catalyst for much of what's happened there, and it's all kind of come together. It's like a perfect marriage of everything. And I just think I appreciate what you're saying is they're not like, they don't have the spending power necessarily of the other teams, but they still, their success has enabled them to, they can still buy the best players and the best players want to go to them because they've won like Champions Leagues and they're, what is it? They've been in like three of the last four finals or something like that. And they do have a legacy, a history of real dominant eras. I don't really know if Arsenal have had that. Like, I'm not like completely knowledgeable about the Herbert Chapman era, but I'd probably say maybe that might have been Arsenal's most dominant era. But we've had like periods where we've won a few trophies and had. But I don't know if we've ever been the dominant team where you're just expected to win. Like even when we won the league, they weren't like dominant eras, you know, where that you're kind of winning back-to-back Premier Leagues. I don't think Arsenal have ever won. They never won a Premier League back-to-back. So I don't know if we have that kind of same allure as teams like Liverpool as well, in the sense that Liverpool have won the Champions League, they've won the European Cup. What is it like? Is it six times now?
Yeah, six times.
We've never won that. I think we've only won one European trophy. We don't have a great history in Europe. So I don't think to players around the world, I don't know if we have the same lure that Liverpool do. I don't think we can buy in the same way that they can. I do think that maybe we're on the sort of verge of like, we're maybe at a tipping point. And I say that because the fan base has definitely been more invested and they're definitely louder. And the reason that is, part of that reason is, even for someone like myself who's 40 this month and haven't really cared about the team in the same way that I did when I was like a teenager, I feel like a teenager now when I watch them, because it's, you sort of get these dyed in the wool players from the academy that make you care. That you have Aaron Ramsey, who is a complete shithouse, and I imagine that every other fan hates him, but he's quite, when he's on your team, he makes you think. He makes you believe. He reacts like a fan, and he shows that it means everything to him. And that very animated, emotional response and approach to the game is what is a catalyst for the fans and the noise within the stadium. And the reason that we've been a lot louder this year, and I'm kind of worried that it might change next year, is a lot of Arsenal offered a lot of fans, you know, 30 people have been going to Arsenal 30 years and the season ticket's been in their family and they're older. They gave them a season ticket holiday this year after the pandemic. A lot of people took that because we were crap as well. So a lot of younger fans have been going because it's been a lot easier to get tickets. Also, a lot of younger fans were going because we were crap and no one was buying the tickets. And I can tell you now, like, it's been, I think I've been 8 times this year at home. And at the beginning of the season, it was easy to buy tickets. It's been a lot harder as the season's progressed. So like a younger fan base has been going for all these reasons. And that has coincided with the fact that the team has got young players that these young fans can invest in. And they're, and maybe we're on the kind of a tipping point where we could be onto something special. But I do think that we're one or two really key players, like over the summer, whoever we buy, if we buy someone to play you know, as a striker, that could be all, you know, that could be the difference. And although Xhaka has come on, and there's again another sort of polarizing player, and I won't get too much into him, I do think he's much improved this year and shown his value to the team. They still need another centre midfielder, and we need a left back to cover Tierney, because clearly Tavares maybe is not up to it. So we're a few players away, and that, and the recruitment over the summer will be absolutely crucial. So I haven't lost all hope. I do think we're on the verge of something, but I look at what the other teams have, money, and just they're kind of in that winning mentality and rhythm. And Arsenal and Spurs have almost both, incredibly, we've both become banter clubs at the you know, you call it Spursy. We don't have a word like that for Arsenal, but everyone, every fan is always like, Arsenal bottle it here, or Arsenal are going to lose their nerve, or Arsenal don't have the mentality. So, you know, Arsenal Fan TV have made us a joke. So we've both become banter clubs, and to step out of that and become a clubs that are feared by the other teams, I think we've probably got a bit of a way to go.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It is interesting. I mean, I get dug out a lot, and it isn't just this kind of self-preservation or worst case scenario catastrophizing type thing. I do think there is something good for you, not for us, but good for you going on at Arsenal. From the outside, I do look at it and I see a lot of kind of parallels to what was going on with Pochettino in the early days there, in terms of you've got that kind of nucleus of young, talented players that love the club and are just buzzing to be playing for the club. And, you know, it doesn't mean they're all going to stay there or work out there forever. You know, we had like Ben Taleb, we had Ryan Mason, Andros Townsend, you know, who were there in some of the early stages of it. But, you know, the ones that are there now is Harry Kane, really. That's about it, you know. And the others have gone on, done their own thing or whatever. But the point is that when you're kind of, you know, when you're driven along by that, like you say, you can then add those players on. If you recruit smart, you can add the players on to fill the gaps and build on kind of that platform of enthusiasm, of passion, even though that's become such a dirty word nowadays, that Arteta seems to have established. And yeah, you know, I was sort of at first, obviously, you know, you kind of, I had the initial worry, he's worked under Pep Guardiola, this guy's going to be decent. And then probably after the first year or so, I was just looking really at Arteta and kind of took that he seemed more like an Andre Villas-Boas, the kind of the young guy that was just overreaching, trying too hard to be like this disciplinarian, bit of a control freak, was obviously getting players' backs up, people weren't responding to him that well. But he seems to have broken through that.
I think that we all are guilty of this, right? Whereas actually, if you look at it, you're like, right, firstly, to Arsenal to get where they are, they basically had to blow up what they had. Do you see what I mean? Like, even Emery had a shocking squad. So to like, if you look back to the squad that Arteta had when he came in and where the team was and what had happened under Emery, like that is such a tremendous amount of work to reshape the squad, then actually instill some expectations and demands rather than, like, I'm not going to get into Wenger. I love Wenger. He should have. It went on too long. But you know, I won't really say a bad word against him. I absolutely love him and what he did for the club. But standards are dropped, and you know, we'd stagnated slightly. And Arteta had to go in there and that really rattle some cages and change. So yeah, he's got to change the culture, change the squad, then implement his own style. And if you're going to blow everything up and start from afresh with a young team. Even when we lost three in a row, I'm like, that's just what happens. This is what happens to a young team. Like a young team, pretty newly assembled as well, by the way, like a lot of new faces in there. They go through good and bad patches. Don't get me wrong, there are times where I thought you could look at some of his substitutions and question them. Sometimes he'd try something tactically when you think it would have been a safer option to kind of go with the obvious option. Sometimes you could say maybe his man management, I bet he maybe rubs people up the wrong way. But ultimately, I have very much been believing in what he's about. And I accept that if you're going to have a young team and you're part of a long-term project, you have good and bad spells and you're going to fail. And those failures are actually really important, because if those young players are going to go on to achieve, they need to be able to experience those failures and know how to come back. So I've kind of never really wavered. I've always sort of thought he's the right man. He just needs time. And I always kept thinking to myself, well, if you get rid of him, who'd you get? You're not going to get Klopp or anyone like that. So who'd you replace him with? So it's a really tough job. And I think he's done a great job. And if you do look at his recruitment, it's been pretty bloody good, like including with Edu. Everyone, you know, absolutely slaughtering the likes of Edu when things go wrong, but how many players have we brought in that have actually turned out pretty good as well? Like one being Martinelli. I think we're in a good place, but it's so much riding on tonight, it's actually sickening. We could really be in a great position, obviously, if we get Champions League football and recruit well over the summer, and then at the same time, you know, Conte gets Champions League football. Who can he recruit over the summer? You've got already two game-changing, world-class players in Son and Kane. That it makes me feel sick how good they are. They all I worry about tonight. Like, don't get me wrong, Kulusevski obviously has been, but I just think about Kane and Son, and I'm like, how do you stop them? I hate that Spurs have got them. It kills me.
I've got this, you know, I've got this horrible fear that Kane's going to sell Campbell us, that you're going to be, you're going to be in a better position, right? This momentum, that everything, all this stuff that I'm, Arsenal's great shit that I'm on about at the moment. You are going to be in a better place in a couple of years' time. And Kane he's not going to sign a new contract at Tottenham. He's going to Van Persie, I know City have signed Haaland than that, but I still wouldn't even be surprised if they signed him on a free. He's 30 goals a year. Do you know what I mean?
I honestly think he'll go United or Chelsea, or I could see him
please not Chelsea. No.
I'm not sure whether Harry's the sort of man to go abroad, but I could see a team like a Bayern Munich, you know, like if he was on a free.
Harry won't go to Germany, will he? Come on. Do you know what I mean? He's not going to do that. He'll be saluting a big Union Jack flag in his bedroom every night before he does, if he went to Germany.
Romero's on loan, right?
Well, it's a loan obligation to buy.
Because I hate the Spurs have got him as well.
He's quality, isn't he? He's really good. Yeah. He's really good. But I think he's one of those players that's just so good that we're just enjoying him while we got him, because yeah, he looks primed for a Real Madrid or someone like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know.
Your front three is just, that is what makes me feel sick about tonight.
I mean, you'd have Son and Kane at Arsenal, right?
In a heartbeat. And that's,
they're pretty much what you're missing.
Oh my God, if we had Kane, I often think this. I was like, where would we be if we had Kane?
Well,
like,
this is why I was so fucking relieved when you didn't get Vlahovic when Juventus got him, because I really thought he would have been a spectacular signing for you.
I do too. He's a beast. He's athletic, physical, technical, can finish, offers, like, you know, he's good in the air, gets in behind, like, he's got everything. It would have been a game changer. All I can see is, like, tonight, my fear is that, like, 3 minutes in, like, Spurs absolutely, like, ripping across, tearing everywhere, smashing into tackles. Cedric's half asleep. Ball goes to him, plays some shit back pass. Kane goes round Ramsdale. Ramsdale brings him down, sent off, penalty, 1-0. Do you know what? If this happens, and I've said this, I'm going to be absolutely sick. And then it'd be like, oh, this is going terribly for Arsenal. They're 3-0 down inside 20 minutes. Xhaka loses his nut. Now we're down to 9 men. I can't handle it. I can see there being a draw, but I just can't see us winning. I know that makes me super negative, but I just don't know how we... To win there, with that, it'll be so loud. Oh, it's going to be awful.
Imagine if you... my fear about this is, though, mate, if you win this, not only, like, obviously, does that seal Champions League and whatever it is, it's almost like... It is almost... It's obviously, it's not up there of you winning the league at White Hart Lane, but it's in that similar sort of ilk of kind of achieving something at our ground. So you do have form for doing that there. And
yeah, but it can be that for both, either club. This is why there's so much at stake.
No, we stay fifth, though. This is the thing. We're still relying on you. It's all out of our hands now.
That is true.
Because you always beat Newcastle.
But say St James's Park, Monday night football.
You always slap them there. You always do. Other than that one time when they came back and...
You mean when I was there?
God rest his soul.
In the Gallagher End. Yes, I was there. I went with my mates. One's a Geordie, Sports Newcastle. One's a Spurs fan. But he kind of went to his wife's a Geordie, and he went to university in Newcastle. So he kind of, there is sort of his second team. And I went with my other mate, who's a Greener. And we're in the Gallagher End, 4-0 up at half-time. I don't celebrate, like, one, because I don't want to get beaten up, but also it would irritate me if someone did that. So I was just kind of, like, enjoying it. But then at half-time, going to have a drink, and I'm like, oh, it's kind of a bit of an anticlimax. Like, we've come all the way up here, and, you know, it's over at half-time. And then my other mate, who been slaughtering him already this morning, he... In our WhatsApp group, he's like, oh, I forgot the game was tonight. He's meant to be a football fan, by the way. And then my message up before that was, I feel sick. I can't even, I don't think I can watch tonight. And then Newcastle scoring, and so that he doesn't stand out of place, he gets up and he's like, he's not cheering, but he's clapping. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, why the fuck are you standing up and clapping? I was like, I'm not going to cheer. Like, I'm going to sit here. I'm not getting up. I'm not, what are you doing? Anyway. All these Scallies behind me have heard me speak, so they obviously know that I'm not a Geordie. 4-1, 4-2. I'm sitting next to my Geordie mate. I said to him, if you touch me when it's 4-3, I'll take your head off. Anyway, it's 4-3. He's laughing. I was like, seriously, mate, if it goes to 4-all, like, just leave me the fuck alone. And then these Scallies have heard it. Tioto smashes it in. They grab me. I don't know who they are. They grab me. They start shaking me. These Geordies shaking me. Two women as well. Not blokes, women. Shaking me. Get absolutely ape shit. And I just had to stand there and take it. It was... We meant to have a night out after that. I was like, fucked out. I was like, I'm not going out. I'm not interested.
Just sitting in the hotel room and a half. Like.
So I was raging. We went and got something to eat. And then the worst part of all, to go on this night out, fucking Toyota and all these Geordie Newcastle players turn up. They come to the bar, right? I was like, fuck this. I'm never coming back.
Did you get a photo of him?
No, I was like, no word of a lie. They were in this room, this private room down these stairs, and there was a queue for the men's toilet. And on the other side, there was a queue of women to get into this. I was like, okay, so I've lost. And while I'm queuing up to go piss, these blokes are basically, these Newcastle players, they've got nothing to play for. Why are they doing this? I've got to watch all these, you know, women go in there. It's just like absolutely, it was horrific. I think I went up another year and we won 1-0. Koscielny, I think. I don't know if that was before or after that game. And they had Pardiola as well. It was just everything about it was, it was awful. But I don't think I've been at any bad Arsenal Spurs games. Mainly see us win, but I've been at some. You know, I was there Naeem from the halfway line. I was there when Koscielny and Szczesny fucked up, and Barry Ferguson ruffled Szczesny's hair when they won the Carling Cup. I saw us lose to Chelsea, Carling Cup, Man City.
Champions League final. You were there.
Yes,
weren't you?
Yeah. I lost. I was there, and I sat next to a Spurs fan. This geezer. So me and my mates,
Football hates you.
I know. I did. I went to the first five cup finals I went to. We lost. This geezer, we won our tickets for a ballot. So where I was sitting in the Champions League final was kind of like a mixture of fans. Anyway, this Spurs fan's next to me. This geezer, he has been smashing the booze all day. So he's battered, right? So he's giving it the big one as well. And then, obviously Barcelona win, and he's next to me, and he's like, I've come all this way to watch you lose. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, I've got nothing to say. Like, I'm so drained and gutted. I was just like, well, you know, you spent all that money to come watch a team you hate. But then I kept thinking, actually, I respect that. He spent all that money to come watch a team he hates lose. And also, I'd been offered, like, I don't know, there was geezers outside the stadium offering 1,400 quid for a ticket. But obviously I was like, there's no way I'm missing the Champions League final, even for £1,400.
No.
But I did have two mates who were Liverpool fans who also won tickets in the ballot, and they sold theirs, but they sold theirs before we got there. They still came to Paris, but they sold theirs for £700 apiece. So I've seen some bad ones. And the only other time, by the way, also, listen to me, I'm going to say this now. I have no respect for any fan that watches this with an a Spurs fan. If you're an Arsenal fan, there's no way you can watch this game with a Spurs fan. Who, you cannot put yourself through that. And my mate messaged me saying, oh, I'm watching this, we're going down the pub with some Arsenal and Spurs fans. Like, as if I'm going, are you mental? I'm not doing that. I'm not going down there with Spurs fans. Imagine if they win. We'll be in the pub with them, pissed, celebrating. No chance. I want to be on my own. I'm either at the game or I'm on my own, isolated, away from all the noise.
It's irrational. It's totally irrational. We get that. But it is that thing, is it? Somebody could be one of your best mates you've known for years. But in that moment, you just despise them. You don't.
No, there's no way. I'm not watching it. I'm not watching it with anyone I know. Listen to this. The one time I met mates to watch the game was that fucking game in the Emirates. Where it was 4-4, right? I was like, I was in their face.
The David Bentley one.
When we were winning, I was getting in their face, and then it was 4-4. I was like, I'm never ever doing this again. And then I got a mate that I lived with who was a Spurs fan, and he. We hadn't lived together that long, and he had his other Spurs mate round, and they were getting pissed. And I watched the game. I think we lost 2-1 when Danny Rose scored that goal. Was it 2-1? Anyway, that game where Danny Rose scored that goal.
Yeah, 2-1. Him and was it Bale as well scored the other?
Yeah, and they got battered and were singing outside my room. I went to bed because I was so pissed off, and they were singing pissed outside my room, two Spurs fans. I was like, that is it. I'm never watching Arsenal Spurs with anyone ever again. I just need to be on my own.
I had, remember when we beat you 3-2 at the Emirates, when you'd gone 2-0 up and then back? And
yeah, was it Kabul scored that?
Kabul scored the winner, yeah. But I was working and living in Iceland, in the country, not the not the low rent supermarket. I was watching his bar, and to be honest, like, you know, there were probably about three Spurs fans in the whole of Iceland at this point. I was in this bar and it was just teeming with gooners. And I was there, you know, loud and proud. I had my colours on. I think I had a shirt on, or at least I had a scarf on, because I was just like, well, whatever, I'm abroad, I'm representing. Sitting there with a pint on my own, watching the football. And then it's like, it's 1-0. And there's like a lot of cheering and stuff. And then I'm sat there. And obviously then at this point, they're starting to be like, oh, there's a Spurs fan in here. And a couple of them sort of talking to me. And they've been like, find out I'm English. And they're kind of, you know, very interested in it all and everything. And then, but it was in that way of just being like, oh, you know, you're abroad and you're watching your team. That's quite, they were actually getting a bit like weird and aggy in a way about it. It just kind of being like, you know, this is an Arsenal pub, you know, what are you doing in here wearing a Tottenham scarf? And I was just being a bit like, mate, you know, we're abroad. It's Iceland. I don't know whether it's an Arsenal pub or a Tottenham pub or whatever. Just get on and enjoy the game. And then they'd had a few beers, but then the second goal goes in. And at this point, they're all like, way, jumping around me, patting me on the head and all this sort of stuff, ruffling my hair and just sitting there not doing anything. Obviously, by the time it came around, when the third goal goes in, Yunus Kabul's in, I've probably, you know, like I said, I was sat on my own. I probably had about 6-7 pints or so over the course of this game. And I was despicable. Yeah, I mean, that third goal went in. I'm talking red face, like spit flying out my mouth, just like, stand there and then thinking, and you sort of get that moment of realization of like, I'm gonna get my head kicked in a minute. Yeah. So you just kind of like sneak out the pub, just go home, and that's
but,
it.
But I always think at that moment, what if I've gone mental? What if we don't win? What if they score? What if they equalize?
I couldn't help it though. It was just coming back from that point. It was a pure release.
One of the worst ones actually, when my mate, I am not joking, like literally the least aggressive person you can ever imagine, like, just, it's just not in him. I've barely seen the bloke get the ump, let alone ever out. And we went out and watched Arsenal when they lost to Atletico Madrid in the Europa League. And there was these pissed Spurs fans behind us. And he started like patting my mate. I think like he did something to him. Like he was, they were giving a shit all game. And then he definitely touched him, or he threw beer on him or something. And my mate, I've never, ever seen get the ump, like rose up, like went full Incredible Hulk.
It's always the quiet ones, mate. It's always the quiet ones.
And I was just like, holy shit, like, what's he doing? Like, I've never seen him do this. And then the geezer got chucked out because he was totally pissed anyway. But I actually think it's even more annoying when you see, when you've got like an Arsenal or Spurs, whoever you support, like the opposition fan there, like egging another team on. Like, that's even more annoying. It's like, you know, like seeing them celebrate another team beat you, like that's proper irritating when they've come out specially for the occasion.
I've definitely been that person, just so you know. I've 100% been the person celebrating whoever, Brighton or something, in the pub when they're beating Arsenal. On tonight's game, mate, I know we don't want to talk about it, but how do you think you're going to line up? Do you reckon you're gonna sit back, or, because I mean, one thing I'll give Arteta is that he does seem to be sort of in sync with the values of the club, of the Arsenal, as you like to call it. What is that about? Where does the come from?
I actually don't know, but I do love it. I'm not gonna lie to you. It
winds me up. It really.
I can
does.
Imagine. I would hate it. I would definitely hate it, because it's like almost sort of self-importance. But
the Arsenal.
I think it's just where people used to be like, I'm going over the Arsenal, or like when I hear it heard, I'm like, I'm going over the Arsenal. It's not. I don't really hear people say, "How'd the Arsenal get on today?" It's more like, I'm going to the Arsenal. But I heard a tube driver once say, like, we're stopping at the Arsenal, and I respected that. I loved it. But well, like I say...
So you know, he was a gooner. That was it. He must have been.
Absolutely. I would hate it. Don't get me wrong. I would be like, who the fuck do they think they are?
So the other one was, you call the pitch the carpet as well. I saw the Arsenal social media team doing that. They said, the Arsenal, the carpet. And then it was...
That's a bit too, Bob. I'm not having that. But but the Arsenal I'm having, I do like it. But I fully understand why it'd wind anyone up.
We're doing a TIFO tonight, if you want to know about too, Bob, mate. Have you seen it? Have you heard
that? Yeah.
It's divisive. I've said this now. I've had a lot of my mates be like, stop being a miserable old twat about it, which, fair enough, you know, I get it. But, I mean, in my most humble of opinions, we did it in a Champions League quarter-final against Manchester City. I can understand that, right? This is a league game. And I know it's a big game. I know it's a derby and all this, but that should be... That's where the atmosphere comes from, the fact it's a North London derby. I don't think we should be doing TIFOs. I'll take it up with the trust if you're listening, Kat. But I get it, or whatever. You know, people just want to enjoy it. People are allowed to enjoy football in a way that I don't. But... Does it worry you, the thought of Tottenham having a TIFO, Ben? Do you think that could be the deciding factor in tonight's game?
No. I don't. I think the deciding factor will be... I think Arsenal will... I don't know if they sit back, but I definitely think they'll try to play on the counter. I don't know. Like maybe you're trying to fight fire. I would just... Oh, it's difficult. I just think... My worry is how far Spurs start and the noise and the atmosphere. And like, because we are quite a young team and inexperienced, how do they cope with that? That would be, and like Xhaka, like, don't be a knob in the first 20 minutes. Don't give a penalty away. Don't smash someone. Don't kick the ball away. Like, it's about keeping your head, I think, and playing the game and not getting too emotional. But I do think it is... I think it's good to be like motivated by emotion, but you can't let emotion control you or like make you do something stupid, which he has a habit of doing. So that I think that he might try and play on the counter-attack is what I'd imagine. But at the same time, I do think that there is a danger if you sit back and the Spurs start fast that... You know, you're inviting trouble. So maybe it'd be interesting to see. Again, like my concerns are Cedric. You know, Son against Cedric. Maybe Tomiyasu. I think he'll play Tomiyasu left back. I think that's what he did in the last game. Cedric right back. He might switch him over, though, for Son. But I know you've got Kulusevski on the other side. So I'm not entirely sure what he'd do there. But my worry is Kane drops in. And then plays that, you know, inside ball, inside the fullback and centre back into Son, whose timing of the run is like absolutely unreal. And then it's about not letting Kulusevski come in on his left. And to be honest, like not fouling him in the box, like that would be, I could see him sort of cutting in and Xhaka come like charging over and clattering him in the box. It's so annoying that you, as a fan, everything that you visualise is the negativity. Like I can't even bring myself to imagine what would happen if we win, because then it would be even worse. I do like to protect myself. I'll be happy with a draw. If you offered me a draw now, I'd take it. Obviously, I'd be well happy with it.
How much have you missed Champions League football, Ben?
I have missed it, and I don't miss the group stages. I always think they're like really boring, and we always like play Olympiacos and Bayern Munich and... But if you do get through the group stage, that is what I miss. I do, and obviously the early stages of the Europa League are totally shite and boring because you're playing crap teams. But
when was I was going to say, when was your last good like Champions League run? When was the last like good Arsenal Champions League campaign?
I don't know how many times we've got. I think we've only got past the quarterfinals a few times. Like, obviously, we got to the final. I think we got to the semis as well. I'm always really rubbish. Like, once I get off this chat, I will remember all this stuff like specifically. But when I try and remember it on the spot, I can't. And I don't think we ever really got. We never really went too much further than the quarterfinals. Quarterfinals to me are just like play Barcelona or Bayern Munich and get bad. That is just what I. I just always remember it happening. But I do miss those big games. I miss being able to attract good players. So, yeah, it would be good to get back in it. It's more to me, how I view it is like, oh, look, it's not, oh, great, we're back in the Champions League. we're going to have a chance of competing for it. It's, if we get into the Champions League, what kind of striker can we buy over the summer? And just the confidence it will give the team. But I still think, even if Arsenal don't make the Champions League, right, if you said to an Arsenal fan, you finish fifth after, you know, finishing eighth, you know, that's progress. Whatever anyone says, and I'm not just saying this to protect myself, I do genuinely believe it. I still think that this season marks progress. And I want Champions League 100% more than anything. But I'm wary of being completely catastrophic if we don't make it, because we've still progressed this year. We still have something to believe in, and it's still... I still think the project is on track.
The funny thing is, both teams are, we're in exactly that same position, right? If it was anybody else, right? If it was anybody else, and it's a shootout for fourth and fifth, and Spurs can finish fifth, I would say, well, we started the season with Nuno Espirito Santo. It looked awful. It looked like Conte was going to walk after 2-3 games, even after we did bring him in. But now we've stabilised. We've added a couple of good players in January, and we're in a good place. Whether we finish fifth or fourth, I don't really mind. I think kind of signs are looking positive. The problem is, mate, if we finish fifth, it means that you finish fourth. And yeah, it just takes that kind of that ability to be a bit more reflective about it away. Do you know what
it
I mean?
It does. Like, you're right, I keep thinking that, like, the way it keeps playing out in my head is, like, if we lose tonight, that's it, it's over. I still appreciate it's in our hands, but if we don't finish fourth, then probably I'll just think, fuck football. I'm not interested. It'll take me a while to recover, because it would be Spurs. Had it been anyone else, then it might be different, but, yeah. It's as big a game as we played in such a long time. I mean, in my lifetime, apart from FA Cup semi-finals and stuff, can't think of a bigger North London derby than this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.